This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. I'm your host, Richard Woodward, and behold, there came three wise men from the East Anglia and presenting to you gifts of gold, frankincense and myrrh, or something like that. This is a Christmas special. This is, we have Christmas gifts in the respect of guest contributions from Radio Suffolk's Graham Mack, a familiar voice. But now you get to see him in his outfit as well.
In my outfit, this is what I wear pretty much every day throughout December.
This is a work country.
Festive cheer, everyone.
For those of you watching in black and white, Graham is wearing an elf outfit. So for the benefit of our podcast listeners.
I thought it was a giant tomato.
Oh, is it?
Hey! I've got the trousers as well, actually.
He's standing on... Oh, look at that. Oh,
amazing.
Do your shoes have little... bells on the end of them as well, Graham?
They do, but I'm just in my socks at the moment.
So that's okay. That's okay.
A bit of a letdown, but there we go.
We will forgive you for that. And also joining us, a guest contribution from our friends at the Kings of Anglia, the EADT, Andy Warren. Good evening to you, Andy.
Good evening.
Going for the kind of sedate, chilling out kind of vibe. No outfits.
Yeah, chilled out entertainer. I've got a little blue Santa hat.
There you go.
It's a bit tight for the head, but this is great. This is like when washed up boy bands kind of merge. This is brilliant. Like McBusted. It's great. This is brilliant.
And we'll talk about your shirt in a minute because it's of relevance to joining us from the brilliant Blue Monday, because I'm hosting, so I can say what I want. Joe Fares, good evening to you, Joe, in your cream, black and red away shirt. How the devil are you, Joe?
I'm good. I was just thinking this was the most Christmassy Ipswich shirt. A little bit candy cane, I'd say.
Yeah, exactly right. A little bit of red in there. There's green on the Abbott Ale logo, so it's all good. Andy, tell us about the shirt that's behind your shoulder that most people might be able to see.
This shoulder here, yeah. This is lockdown renovation, turning the spare room into a bit of an office. I put some shirts up, and the one that you're talking about, Rich, is the old playoff final shirt, which I've been very fortunate enough to get signed over the summer by a fair amount of the guys that played in there while we were making a little film, which your good self, Joe, were in. I forgot to get you to sign it, though, didn't I? Your signature is missing. Burley, Sheepshanks, Stuart, Fares.
That would have taken the value off it.
You could sign the back, Joe. That's fine. There's somewhere around there. That's one for the new year. We'll get the Sharpie out and get Joe to sign it. But yeah, I mean, talking of that brilliant 1999-2000 documentary video, we'll be talking. What we're going to do is Merry Christmas, by the way, guys. Depending on whenever people are listening to this, Merry Christmas, Happy Boxing Day, Happy Christmas Eve, New Year, what have you. We are going to look back through 2020. We are going to try. We had a bit of a preamble where we set out the rules, which was keep it light and don't mention the C word, either of the C words, too much. But certainly the one which has got a virus at the end of it, which is going to be tricky at certain points. But we are going to canter through the year, trying to pick out the good bits, trying to dissect and analyze the less good bits, and look ahead to 2021, which frankly is going to have to not try too hard to be better than this 2020 year, which has been an absolute nightmare. But wherever you are, we hope you are well. We are with you over Christmas and we're going to crack on. Graham, I haven't heard too much from you. You're doing all right, Graham. I just want to check in there because
I'm good.
The elf on the shelf face to be smiley and happy.
I'm good. I've got elves here with me as well. I got an email saying it was kind of festive attire, and Andy's, he's done the job a little bit with the hat.
But token you two guys,
it's like Del Boy wearing the Batman and Robin outfit to the funeral, isn't it?
I've put lights up for those of you who are listening.
That's okay,
Christmas lights. And this is Chunky Knitwear that is out of the wardrobe, hasn't been worn for a year, and is back on. So, and I look either like Chunky Knitwear or Milk Tray, which generally gets advertised this time of year anyway. So I think I'm ticking it
You're
back.
Ticking that,
Graham, okay. You do win best dressed. I think that's...
Thank you very much. That's good. That's in writing, and there's a possibly a trophy at the end. I'll be more than happy to...
There'll be a certificate, I'm sure, in the post.
The exactly the right. Thank you.
let's go straight into it with January, because January to me kind of all pivots around the 1st of January, where I guess, Graham, can you enlighten us? Because you're in the studio, obviously, hosting the match day coverage for Suffolk.
Yeah.
But you're not like Brenner. You didn't have the joy of Wickham's traffic or anything like that.
Any of that. So up until recently, for obvious reasons, I attend all the home games. But I haven't done this season for obvious reasons, because the setup's quite different now. So Mick Mills and Brenner on a typical Portman Road match, they would all sit together and we'd have the away station sat next to us. As things are now, Brenner is sat in his usual seat. Mick has to sit on the row behind him, a couple of meters away. If I was going, I'd get in the way of the opposition station, or I'd have to go behind Mick, and it would just make things ridiculous. So it's just been best for everyone, really, if I've stayed put. Prior to that, so into last season, I was at all the home games, but don't travel to the away games just in case something goes wrong at the away ground and we lose connections and things like that. There's always somebody back at base to kind of hold the fort, as it were.
So having hosted the phone-in, which had presumably got a little bit acrimonious in through November and December, when Neil Warnock's, I remember some of the phone-ins, Neil Warnock's name might have come up.
Yeah.
What was your thinking about the phone-in after the Wickham game, when Paul Lambert's four-year contract extension broke?
It was just such a bizarre day. I think we found the news out about the five-year contract just a couple of hours prior to the programme starting. And it was one of those where you had to kind of double check it. We just had the Lincoln game and the shambles that was that. We'd had the very bizarre post-match interview from Paul Lambert after Gillingham, was it, on Boxing Day, when he was kind of suggesting that, maybe he'll be on his way. All of a sudden, a five-year deal. Me and Joe spoke about it on Radio Suffolk a couple of months later. I put it to you, Joe, what was that, the most bonkers decision in the history of football? That's what it felt like. You had all this negativity towards the manager. The results weren't great. He's, hinting that he might potentially be moving on. Then all of a sudden, he's here for another 5 years, a five-year deal. Wow, he's not going anywhere. We had texts prior to kick off that day saying, well, this year's over before it's even began. It just seemed crazy. And then post match after the Wickham draw, Paul Lambert mentioned, this might be my last gig. And I thought at the time that sounds quite defeatist, really. You're still only 50. You're arguably your best years, and you should be thinking maybe your best years in management are ahead of you. I know he's had success in the past, but this might be my last gig. And it just felt very flat. And it was another very busy phone in, shall we say, off the back of what had been a really, really busy one after the Lincoln game, which was just horrific. Oh. And we were all just, it was one of those, you got home that night, you're just scratching your head thinking, wow, it's the football club in terms of broadcasting, in terms of print journalism, it's the club that keeps on giving, isn't it, really? There's always something around the corner. People might have said the news gone by, oh, the football's boring, the football's not up to scratch, but blimey, it's not without event at Ipswich Town, it really isn't.
Andy, were you rubbing your hands together with kind of clicks and all that kind of stuff, or were you thinking, oh man, I'm going to have 4 years of, well, let's be honest, 4 years, let's wait and see. I know Joe is kind of just stewing there. I'm going to go to Joe last on this one. But yeah, what was your take?
First and foremost, it interrupted what is the best pre-match food League One has had to offer so far. Yeah, it was amazing. Home-cooked lasagna, garlic bread. I'd got there, sat down eating that, and then a phone call from the club media manager. Just a heads up, about to announce a new 5-year deal for Paul Lambert. And just like Graham's just said, you're just shocked, aren't you? It was just so, after the week that had led up to that, to end it with that was just, and to start a year like that was just bizarre. Truly bizarre. We were told the contract like was whisked down the motorway from Ipswich to meet in the hotel. Like they actually brought a contract. It was literally signed that morning.
Oh wow.
So it very, very strange way to start the year.
Joe, you've not really given your views on Paul Lambert much over the last year or so. But from an objective point of view, this is kind of, not only was the timing strange because of the results that have preceded it, but this has now held us back potentially from making important strategic decisions that, you know, we'll go through the rest of the year. There have been intervals where you kind of think, you know, if he's on a 1-year or 2-year contract, it seems like a no-brainer type decision. But does this now feel like handcuffs that might hold the club back from your perspective?
Yeah, it does feel like it's just a massive millstone, because whatever the terms are of the contract, it's going to be a lot more expensive to sack him with that contract than it would be with the existing one that he had, which would have been up this summer. He had 18 months to run on it. But like I said, like the guy said, it was just an absolute shock when the contract came. I went to Wickham that day and there was sort of six of us in the car. We sort of, just as we were parking up, the sort of tweet came through, sort of everyone's phone sort of exploded from all the group chats they're in, of all these messages coming through. As we walked out, there's like another car of sort of mates where there's sort of four or five in that, and everyone was like, what the is going on here? That is just crazy. And sort of, and out the back of Wickham there was like a big fan zone, and every single fan had the same reaction. And I wasn't expecting them to be sacked then, but I think if you'd have asked 100 Ipswich fans, is the manager going to be sacked or is the manager going to sign a new 5-year contract, I think 100 would have said sacked ahead of that contract. It's just crazy. And I say it's obviously an expensive commitment for Marcus Evans, and who knows what the break clauses are, but I can't imagine they're cheap. And sort of with the way the season totally collapsed after he'd signed the contract, would he have still been here this season without that new contract?
Yep, that I guess we'll sadly never know, but we can probably speculate, as we have done at great length. Moving things on, I mean, the Wickham performance was not too bad. At least it was a non-defeat to a top 10 club, which we'll talk more about that throughout the year as well. But I guess there's a few bits, and obviously January window, Andy, do you guys like the January transfer window, or covering Ipswich, is it just like for us supporters, is just total pointless activity and just 4 weeks wasted?
I can handle the January window. I'm okay with that. It's the summer one that does me, because it's quite stressful actually for like three, particularly this one where essentially the transfer window is open for 6 months. It's a lot. It's a very different time of year for how we do our work, if that makes sense. A lot more time on the phone, a lot more trying to piece things together. Quite nice to get to speak to people that I don't speak to for the rest of the year. But this January was pretty underwhelming, wasn't it? We're talking about Josh Earle here, aren't we? Essentially,
Levi Ando, two.
Yeah.
Josh Earle online,
but that was announced in about November. The Levi Ando deal, so
true.
Get the contract down then. But I guess business out was probably the most notable thing. Bartosz Białkowski's deal to Millwall was kind of confirmed, albeit a little bit silliness with the negotiations about the fee for that one. Jordan Roberts goes out. Enciala goes out on loan to Bolton. Elmer Zuni on loan to Cambridge, Fellaini to Stevenage. Any insights or thoughts on these deals? I guess the Bard deal was inevitable. It was just a shame, yeah, perhaps, that we kind of basically we shrunk the market to just Millwall, didn't we? Basically, I think.
Yeah.
And basically reduced the likely fee.
Yeah. The mess was made in the summer with that one. It was hard for to break that loan, which they'd obviously have had to do to move him anywhere else. And yeah, the mess was made in the summer. Bart just had to go by that point. How many of you thought that was it for Toto? Because I certainly did. Yeah, I didn't think we'd be seeing Toto a starting centre back come the start of the following season. Where did it just went to Cambridge then, didn't he? Which was a really good loan move for him at the time. Sadly, this second one hasn't quite panned out as well as we thought it might do. He's a bit behind Wes Houlihan, I think, in terms of pecking orders and stuff. But I want to see more of Idris. You're a fan of Idris, aren't you, Joe? He's someone I want to see a lot more of.
Personally, if it's a case of sort of getting one of him or Dobra out, I think Dobra was the one that needed more fine-tuning for the first team, and especially the sort of way that we've religiously set up this season with this 4-3-3, that you could say that Idris could play either of the two two wide forward roles or the two effectively forward midfield roles, or even at a push-to-hold midfield role. He's very versatile, and I think that could have made he'd have got a lot of games had he stayed here, just with the way the season's turned out.
Moving on to other business, I mean, there was chat about bids from Brighton for Dobra, and Sheffield United were linked with Wolfenden, which perhaps the Dobra one was more possible or likely at that point. Just to finish January off, there's two bits of kind of cup news that I kind of want to get views on. Graham, you guys cover the ITFC women's team, and to be honest, in 2020, they're generally the shining light, aren't they, in terms of performance on the field?
It's been absolutely brilliant. I think but if you had to say, you know, that perhaps we'll be doing this later, you know, in terms of rating managers and players and things like that, out of 10, if it was the women's team, you'd be getting 10s and possibly 11s across the board. It's been just a terrific season. And I felt so, so bad for them when it got brought to an end, when it was, you know, they were a shoo-in for going up. They'd had the excellent cup run. I think the way they have started this season as well, you know, fingers crossed something like that doesn't happen again, but the fact that they have come back and they've actually kicked on even more, the performances have been magnificent. What is it now? Is it 22 goals in 3 FA Cup games? And granted, 2 were qualifiers and one was against Norwich. They're always going to beat them. But They've been brilliant. The way they're organised, they just go for the jugular with teams. And I think, you know, a lot of other sides would have lost so, you know, massively to Manchester City, might have struggled to kind of come back from that. But what was it? Their next game, they went to Norwich and put, what was it, 10 past?
Yeah. They lost 10-0 and then won 10-0.
Yeah, for February, but that's fine. Because the news in January was that they beat Huddersfield. And I think they might have been the first fourth tier women's team into the fifth round.
Yeah, that's
right. Drew Man City, which was obviously massive news. But yeah, I mean, as you said, you know, just to get to Man City was a massive achievement. And then, yeah, the result obviously not what they would have hoped for, but yeah, bouncing back with a we are bouncing back with another 10-0 against Norwich as well. It's the total polar opposite. You've got high scoring games, a team that cares about the cups and is in the right place in the league table. It's we'll talk more about them later in the
bit. Okay, I'll save my bit for later then.
That's all right.
And whilst they do beat sort of teams that sort of the hashtag Uniteds, the Billericays, and sort of maybe some teams that are at a lower level, when you look at the sort of under 21 team, I think they're top of the league at the moment, and that is a seriously competitive league. It's sort of like your Liverpool's, Arsenal's. They're beating the real top opposition at that level as well, and 6 or 7 in the England sort of under 19s and 18 squad. So the future's looking very bright for the girls there.
Yeah. Andy, there was a lot of hype about the EFL trophy. Luke Chambers said the Wembley final will be a great day out for the fans. And then Paul Lambert basically picks, you know, it's a rotated team. It's the youth players who got us into the quarterfinal, I think, against Exeter. Was it the fifth round? Or I don't really understand the format of the trophy, I'll be honest.
But, the Southern quarterfinal, wasn't it, mate?
Yeah, fine, okay. But and then suddenly to chuck in a lot more of the senior pros and to go out in the last minute and to really flatter, to deceive again. Were you hoping for a trip to Wembley?
I love that competition. And I know it's got people that knock it. I really enjoy that competition. I like seeing the young players. I like seeing the switched around kind of mix and match blended sides. I really enjoy it. So yeah, I'd have loved to have gone with Ipswich to Wembley for that. I've covered a trophy final before with Swindon when I was covering them. It's great. In fact, they took 30,000 fans that day. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. So to see the way that it's been treated, this year's maybe a little bit different, but it makes me sad because it's a trophy and you can win that. And it's something I really enjoy, but you're right. That day, it was a bit of a switch, wasn't it? I think people like Wolfenden played in that. Andre played in it in that game that day.
Teddy Bishop.
Jackson and Norwood both came off the bench. They tried to win it. They definitely tried to win it. Will Keane, when Will Keane got that equaliser, you sensed that Ipswich would probably go on and win that game at that point, while also flattering to deceive. But for it to be Lee Martin that denied us a penalty shootout as well, which is always fun. I left quite sad that day, particularly because it's such a long drive home. But try and win it, please. It's
another way for Wembley as well. Yeah, I think one of only 9 professional clubs who have not been to the new Wembley.
Oh, it's less than that now. It's getting down to six.
Yeah, documentary.
It's really minimal now.
Embarrassing.
It's got to happen one day, isn't it? Has it? Or doesn't it?
I don't know. There must be some kind of curse there that we need to figure out. It's not good. On the league front, before we move into February, because it's kind of light and shade, because January there were 3 wins, 2 draws and a defeat. The defeat, though, is right at the end of the month. But Town finished the month 3rd, only 2 points off top spot. But then this transition into February, and we start playing these top 10 teams, and this is where, you know, spoiler alert, the season's going to be ended on points per game. And it's these defeats that have just punctuated the whole of Lambert's tenure, at least in League One level, to, you know, these rival teams, that is the reason that we're now going to be in the top 6. We lose to Rotherham, I think it is, at the end of January. Then we go on to lose to Sunderland. Let me get the fixture list up here.
Peterborough was in there as well, wasn't it? That was
so the Peterborough 4-1, really. Which was... Graham, do you remember the Peterborough 4-1 phone? And that must have been pretty...
Yes, the Peterborough just came and they were excellent on the day. They had watched Schmodics and Tony, and they completely ran the show. And there was one period when every time they went forward, I thought, this is going to be another goal here. And it usually was. They were, in terms of how clinical they were, in terms of, you know, the final third, they really showed how Town were, you know, Town was showing up. They were really found wanted in that area. Peterborough just went forward, scored all the time. Town had, you know, talking about the end of January into February, Town had kind of re-established themselves, hadn't they? We'd had this really dour period with the Lincoln result, and then all the confusion over the manager's new deal. We should say that the manager and the owner weren't confused. That was awesome, but we were all left scratching our heads. But they'd re-established themselves with results like Burton and Accrington when they looked good on the day. Remember Norwood's goal against Accrington, that lovely little dink, and it was like, yes, you know, they can do it. They have got a good team. But then it fell apart, and the Peterborough game was one of those when you thought, right, there are other teams in this division, sadly, that seem to maybe want it more, and are just better than Town. And yeah, that was one of those days when I think a lot of people, rightly or wrongly, kind of threw in the towel and thought this isn't going to happen for Town this year.
Yeah, but because in January it did feel like there was a little bit of hope coming, because the manager signed a new contract and they'd said they'd had this big sort of after the Lincoln game, they'd all had it out with each other in the dressing room for an hour or so. And after that game, we went 3-5-2 at Wickham. And then for the next 4 games, we sort of won our home games, drew our away games. We were naming an unchanged team, unchanged style. It's like we might have actually just stumbled upon something that might give us enough just to keep us right up in contention here, because, and like I said, we got 10 points from the five games in sort of immediately after the contract signing, which is effectively what we needed to do. But then it just, I don't think, like, whilst a number of fans still weren't overly confident, overly happy with it, I don't think anyone envisaged it falling apart just as bad as it did, where we went from 10 points in five games. And what did we get in the last nine games? Was it 4 points? Was it
something like that? Yeah. There was a draw against Wimbledon and a win over Burton.
Then we lost every other game, wasn't it?
And then defeat from that point onwards. Yeah. The Peterborough game was just, I remember it was like the start of the season in a way, because you turn up at the start of the season and you think, all bets are off. You know, today we're going to turn up and we're going to win and we're going to, you know, the charge to the playoffs begins. But the fact that, you know, it was Peterborough who, you know, they're quite bold and brash in League One, and you kind of, this hoodoo that's hanging over us, to lose so convincingly and to have contributed to so many of the goals as well. You know, there's a couple Will of Norris. Howlers in there, aren't there? And this, yeah, this just concentration against the bigger teams. And then Sunderland, we battered them for 45 minutes, didn't score. And then obviously the inevitable sucker punch there. And Joe, do you remember the Wimbledon draw? The 0-0, was it Plough Lane?
Yeah, a lovely pair of yellow socks on display that day, wasn't there? So
as a, that's as my a best one-off. Memory of that
game. but it was one of those ones. I did have a ticket, but I ended up not going in the end. I passed it on because I think I had something to do that day, and it was not inspiring me to get down there. But it was just the case. You saw the team announced. It was like three centre-backs, and then it was two full-backs. I can't remember the exact team, but it was like Josh Earle as one full-back. Maybe Dinashian as right full-back. It was almost like a flat-back five. Three deep-line midfielders. And was it Downs, Dizelle, and... Scoose Downs and Dizelle, yeah. Maybe. And then just...
Hughes,
yeah. And it was just like, you've got five defenders, you've got three midfielders that aren't getting forward, and you've got two strikers. You could see how that game was going from when the team was announced, and it played out exactly as you expected it to. And at that point, it's just like, we're in trouble now, because we've got a tough run of games coming up, and we just do not look like we've got any goals in us. And, well, like I say, we didn't know where the COVID was going to take the season. Sorry for mentioning it, but
that's all right.
We didn't know where the season was going at that point, but we were really slipping away from contention there, as the points per game table showed at the end of the season. And like I say, there was always this talk, oh, well, we've got a good run in. We just need to get to that running. But we would never have made it from where we were. We were so far adrift. We played more games than everyone.
Because there's this weird, because we saw this in January when, you know, we talked about November and December had been so poor. Then you've got this run of two defeats on the bounce, Rotherham, Peterborough, Sunderland, a 0-0 draw, which is as good as a defeat, frankly, away at AFC Wimbledon. And then we slap Burton 4-1. You know, they scored quite early on, but then we totally dominated. And it's just such schizophrenic performances, and you just don't know where you stand. But, you know, Graham, we constantly see this. We beat the teams the bottom half of the table and build up some confidence, and then it just totally dissipates as soon as someone half decent turns up. You know, Oxford came after that, and that was I think I missed that one. That was a home defeat, but
that was one we actually played quite well in until they scored. But the other games were just, they're going to score and then we cannot touch them.
Is this a confidence thing for you, Graham?
I don't know where it is. I mean, this, I know we'll touch on this season shortly, but in all the games against the top sides, I guess Sunderland and Lincoln, and the manager will be first to point this out as well, they were a little bit hard done by with decisions, but still it's six games against those kind of teams above them, if you like, that's the top sides up until the table changing recently. And I know Accrington are kind of in there now, and you could argue that Accrington are a top side. Well, Tam beat them this season, beat them comfortably at home last season. But yeah, immediately after the win over Burton, I think you look at the teams above Town at the time, it was six played, six defeats. Below them, 12 played, unbeaten, 10 wins. Surely there is something there. And I think games like the Peterborough one, where they were, you know, so kind of easily put to the sword by them, that's got to have some sort of edge. Maybe it doesn't help that we as supporters, as media pundits, are talking about it all the time. We're only going to stop talking about it when it actually changes, that they are there to be shot at in that department. They've got, when everyone's fit, they've got teams good enough to go out and get results against these sides. For whatever reason, it's not happening.
All right, we'll talk about the season ends, spoiler alert, on points per game in a bit. And Andy and I, we had a chat about Rotherham and Coventry being, you know, well organised, well drilled, well coached, but just consistent. They didn't lose too many games. And you kind of think, you know, the 1-0 to Sunderland should have been a point. And you're kind of taking away point at Sunderland, I think. Even the Rotherham game kind of had, I think that was in January, to be fair, but had a sense of Mick McCarthy. Oh, man, that's almost as bad as the C word. But you turn up, you're battered, but don't concede. And you know, every point's a prisoner. If you'd offered me on the, you know, I wouldn't have got on the bus. But we just can't squeeze those kind of points out from those fixtures. And what you're doing, Andy, is gifting 3 points to the teams above or around you, and teams below you will pick up points and push you downwards. It just needs to turn these defeats to draws, and the situation isn't nearly as bad, is it?
That's all it needs to be. Wins to, especially on the road, wins to draws, and you're in business. But like you said, you're putting the Wimbledon game as an example there. You're putting so much pressure on that trip to AFC Wimbledon now that you end up drawing 0-0. That would have been okay had you been getting results at Sunderland, at Rotherham, squeezed out that point. But you then have to be perfect almost against anyone underneath you to even be in that mix. But I don't know what it is, but it just feels to me that for a long time Ipswich just cannot deliver in the big moments, and that goes for not so big moments like a Sky TV game,
promotion.
Exactly. Like when people are watching, that seems to be the moment where it falls flat, and that's a really worrying habit that you've got to kick somehow. Otherwise, the whole thing just can't move forward. But yeah, it's very much themes being set in February and March here that we're still going to be talking about when we get through to the November, December time, isn't it? It's all worrying and quite sad.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
We're running out at the end of February. This is something we haven't seen so far this season. It's kind of the inevitable folding in the very last minute, the go up one end and try to win the game and then don't defend the counter-attack and get sucker punch. There was a couple of sucker punch moments last half of the season, but this one is kind of the worst, and it kind of felt grudgingly inevitable. I think is it Liam Feeney who gets an assist for the Blackpool winner, but the angst this is starting to build, and you know there's more bad news in that you know Vincent Young. I've got some kind of quotes from the press articles. Kane Vincent Young was 2 to 3 weeks away from return, by the way, in February. just thought I'd chuck that in there. But Norwood goes out injured, and he has an adductor problem, and he's out until April, and the injuries are starting to bite at this point. And then you kind of move into March, and you know we've starting to see the impacts of COVID a little bit. That had been but started off in kind of February time around. The Sutherland game is when it started to be talked about. But this Fleetwood match on the 3rd of March, this kind of 1-0, this is again an example of, you know, fine margins, you know, it's a well-taken goal, albeit question marks about Holy's goalkeeping for it. But Joey Barton likes to rub it in as well, and he's made comments about Ipswich a couple of times now, Graham, and you kind of think he's got a point. You know, he mentioned earlier in the season that this is possibly the worst team in kind of living memory of Ipswich Town, and I think that's fair enough. And you know, he was quite candid about his views of Ipswich post match.
I just remember him being very Brent. Was it his pre-match press conference when he said, "If you look at my career trajectory, it's going like that, but Paul Lambert is going, it's going the other way." Like, and it was like, oh, already he was stirring it up.
We need to pause.
When he got the result at the end. I thought, but I could see going into this season. I could see, at the time, I thought Fleetwood are going to be there or thereabouts going into next season. But so far,
yeah,
Joey,
so happened. Yeah, two defeats on the spin at the moment.
Yeah,
old Fleetwood. But he's kind of, he kind of had our number there, Joey Barton. And then
talking about the hand holding celebration as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, man.
He was bang on though, wasn't he? He was absolutely bang on with it.
You kind of look at that photo now and kind of,
But I think even at the time, I think most people thought, what are we doing here? And the players look so uncomfortable doing it. And it's just like
Andre Dizel in particular. If you ever see the video, just look at Andre.
It's Stuart Taylor there, like really sort of like, go on, do it. And it's like, we don't want to though.
We just beat you Gillingham, and they've even got to stand with a roof, and we're doing it. The post-match kind of Fleetwood with their, it's a midweek game, so Midland is not going to get to the midweek games, but that was kind of when the crowd started to turn a lot more. There've been pockets of it. Peterborough was obviously pretty bad as well.
I think Fleetwood was the biggest turn, and in that, the atmosphere in the ground that night, because they just scored early and just totally shut up. We didn't touch them after that. That it really did turn. I was sort of expecting it to be a little bit more negative, because I think we played Coventry on the Saturday after that. But then on the Saturday, even though we were just as poor, the atmosphere wasn't anywhere near as. I don't know why, but it just seemed on that Tuesday night that it was right on sort of tinder. That was, well, not tinder. I don't know.
It was Lambert and
Tinder box atmosphere. I was going to say.
There you go. Yeah, you don't know what you're doing, wasn't there? There was a lot of that aimed at Evans. That was if the turn of the year and the Lincoln defeat was kind of where it all kind of fell apart in terms of supporters at an away game, that was certainly the moment at home, wasn't it? Like you say, Andy, during the game, the owner was getting it in large spades full, really. And then, the full-time, the boos were... And I think you say it wasn't as bad at the Coventry game. It was almost like there was an acceptance that night, wasn't it? This really isn't going to happen. Coventry are probably a better team than us. If they win, who's surprised by that?
Yeah, that Coventry, the form team at the time, but top of the league.
And was Coventry just 1-0 as well?
Yeah.
I think we were all so relieved that it was all 1-0, weren't they? 1-0. Yeah.
And that's all it takes. And certainly the Coventry game where I was at was, there was a sense that we were never, you know, so many games where you watch Ipswich in the third tier and you think, we are never going to score. This is just not going to happen. And Coventry was one of those. Lots of, you know, we'll talk about possession stats in a bit.
I didn't think we huffed and puffed though in those games.
No. And at home as well. Go on, Andy, sorry.
Just relating huffing and puffing and not being able to score, the amount of times I must have written that sentence or a variant of it, it's kind of the football reporter's cliche. Town huffed and puffed for the final half an hour, but couldn't find a way through. And that's the sorry tale of Ipswich Town, sadly.
And that's the story of this, the season proper, really. Coventry is it. We had elbow celebrations from the Coventry players in the North Stand then, and everything kind of, the whole world goes a little bit crazy. You know, we've talked about the women's season is made null and void pretty early on, actually. And then we've got the kind of, will they, won't they end the season in the EFL? And, you know, sorry, just to add this in, Judge is out for the rest of the season in March. A lot of chatter about the games where we've got five at home and only three away. But yeah, everything ends quite quickly. Euro 2020 is postponed until next year, pretty much straight away. There was a 5-point protest that kind of came into existence and then obviously subsided because there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
But ultimately, guys, you know, the stats for that half of the season, or sorry, for the 19-20 season as it was, is that we end up 10th. And then I'm demoted down to 11 on points per game. We'll go through the summer because there's some funny proposals that get made about how we can keep the season alive. But Jackson Norwood are the top scorers in the league with 11 assists. Jackson has 7. Judge has 4. We're the most carded team in the division as well. But this is not the way that people wanted the season to play out, obviously. But certainly, there was no signs that had the season panned out, anything would have been any better, would it?
I think the part of that season that's, what was it, first 15 games, 33 points, and a lot of people were all, you know, shirts around their head saying, you know, it is going to be a League One tour. 19 points from the remaining 21 games. And while they've not beaten top sides this season, I've heard a couple of people say, oh, it's relegation form from Town. Well, it's not, but that is that for 21 games, 19 points. That was they were among the worst teams in the division for more than half a season. But yep. Town were, thank heavens for that really good start, because where might they be? And they weren't playing top teams throughout those 21 games. They were losing to, you know, teams in the lower echelons of league during that time as well.
Just to give you the numbers here, end of February we are 9th, 9 points off first. By the time the season ends, I just mentioned we're 10th, but we are 15 points off first position. I mean, that's a real sad indictment of the way the season panned out. I mean, just going
through, when you see where we were at the start, sort of Graham said 33 after 15, we also had 27 points after 11 games. It was an unbelievable start, really. As good a, at that point, I think us and Liverpool were the two teams in the country with the best records. They went on to win the league by 20 points. We went on to finish 11th.
And these 8 remaining games, 5 home, 3 away. I mean, Andy, you would have probably heard about these 5 home games from Paul Lambert quite a lot because, you know, in there is Southend and Bristol Rovers and Bolton, you know, Portsmouth and Doncaster are the toughest fixtures we've got. Do you think we would have that kind of massive rally up to the playoffs would have happened, because at that point you're so far off that,
and everyone had games in hand on us as well.
Yeah.
This was the problem. Like when you were talking, that Burton win that kind of felt like it was maybe re-establishing Ipswich a little bit. It moved them up the table, but you just had to look underneath, and there were sharks circling underneath. The table was never true from that point onwards. And while I'm sure, I think they'd have finished 8th or 9th maybe. Had the season been played out, they'd have beaten Bolton at home, they'd have beaten Southend at home, but they'd have lost to Portsmouth. I couldn't see the trends ending. I think they'd have got the benefit of their home games by beating Bolton, beating, I think they have Rochdale as well at home, maybe. Yeah. They'd have won those games, but that would only... Yeah. They'd have gone up to eighth, maybe seventh, but that it's not enough, was it?
No, I remember looking at that sports club stats website where it gives you all the millions of combinations. And to get to what we needed for the playoffs, it was almost like win six, draw two. That's what we needed from the last eight games. We needed something like 19, 20 points to give ourselves a sort of 60, 70% chance of getting in the playoffs. And I say the club seemed to make out that all we needed to do was have a good record over the last eight games, we'd get in the playoffs. Now we needed sort of an incredible record over those last eight games.
It was more than 2 points a game, wasn't it? So it's Rotherham, Coventry and Wickham end up going through the playoffs. Your thoughts on... I don't think there's much debate about Rotherham and Cov. Certainly, Rotherham has beaten us twice at home, did what they needed to do, well coached. Same with Coventry. Wickham, probably a bit of a... The playoffs was a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? I'm trying to... Oxford.
Fleetwood. Wickham.
Wickham and one other. Portsmouth. Did you have Wickham as the favourites to go up? I think everyone maybe thought Fleetwood might do it.
Fleetwood or Portsmouth, I'd have said at the time. Yeah. But I was really pleased for Wickham. I just thought, what an achievement that is. A lot of people had them, you know, down for bottom four that season. Gareth Ainsworth did an incredible job. Tough start for them in the Championship. They've got a few points on the board. I really hope they stay up.
Yeah, they're dug in, haven't they? Yeah, doing well now. Yeah.
They were incredibly lucky the season ended when it did, when it went to I think one more fixture, like when you saw the sort of direction of travel and taking Ipswich out of it, Peterborough were, in Joey Barton's terms, going like that, and Wickham were going like that. And I don't think it would have taken much more for Peterborough to have been in the Championship and Wickham to be in League One.
Was it 0.02 of a point or something Peterborough missed out on? And like you say, they were flying the team. And we knew how good they were a couple of months prior when they came to Portman Road. They were excellent that day.
I'm going to kind of go through the summer, because obviously we've got lots of politics in EFL and rescue packages and stuff like that. But there are some other bits and pieces I wanted to pick up. The first is we're in April now, and Ipswich Town go out of the Football Manager 20 Cup in the second round to Luton Town.
Sack the manager. Pathetic.
I say Andy, the manager's got to be to blame for that, hasn't he?
Who did they lose to?
Luton Town, yeah. Looking for a cup set, but unfortunately they weren't able to get it despite being the better side.
Tier above, they weren't. So, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm trying to find excuses. If you don't know what we're talking about, by the way, Joe, you were, out of how many people, you were nominated as the Ipswich Town representative in a Football Manager tournament where teams faced off against each other that were simulated, weren't you? And as the FM researcher, that kind of makes sense. Tell us about it and how that came about and what was your system, because we need to dissect it and figure out where you went wrong.
I can't remember it, all the details of it, to be fair, but so I played against a team, and the guy I was playing against had some dodgy sort of Russian tactics. When he kept going to his tactics screen, it's like you've downloaded some... I was expecting to like have some Novichok poisoning come through my screen if I managed to hold on to victory, but it was... I managed to beat, I think it was Port Vale, potentially someone like that, but beat them and then went into the next round and lost to Luton. So I was sort of... By the end of it, I was getting quite nervous sort of the games as it became quite a big deal. It's sort of like, if I lose this first game, it's going to be quite embarrassing. So I was glad to beat the League Two side and then lose.
Time, didn't you?
No, I genuinely can't remember.
Andy knows.
I think they'll lock it out completely.
There were some red cards involved as well, I think, the way.
And Finn Downs might have got a red. He normally does for me. But like I say, once I lost to Luton in Championships, I was almost quite relieved to be out of the tournament because the pressure was too much for me.
There's a kid who did the...
You haven't represented big clubs, that's why.
Yeah, no, I need to play for big teams.
Have a save with Dortmund and then you can do the Ipswich job. There was a kid who did the FIFA one equivalent, and the trouble is Twitter is just... It's just streams of people's consciousness that's not filtered. I assume, Joe, you got stick, didn't you? Like this, I remember the kid who did FIFA got I could do better than that. And then he ended up playing for a week. All of these guys giving it the big one on Twitter and pretty much beating all of them, I think.
So, I think I handled the stick I got better than he did.
Yeah,
okay. It was just sort of water off a duck's back.
He's been media trained, so.
Water off a duck's back. Media trained, yeah, exactly right. Moving through, we're into May. Andy, we talked about the 20th anniversary of the Wembley playoff win. I mean, that was something to be excited about and a bit depressed that it's 20 years since our last playoff win.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it, that it's that long ago. I think we talked about this the other day, and for all, like, Paul Lambert talks about this club's got no right to go back to the Robson era. It's the Burley era that I think this crop are being judged against now, because for a generation of fans, that was the day. That, and then the season that followed, obviously. But 20 years, it's making me feel old.
Yeah.
Thinking back that long. But what a wonderful group of players, and what a wonderful, wonderful team and journey that was. It's just so sad that seems a world away now, doesn't it?
Yeah. It
seems so unnecessarily far away as well.
Yeah, the thought of the 20 years, the closest we've got is a couple of semi-finals, isn't it, or three semi-finals, but and a cup semi-final as well against Arsenal, but just starved of success. You know, we had Luke and Mark on a few weeks ago on our live show, and kind of asking them, you know, having not grown up with any of the Premier League era stuff, do you feel like this history's hanging over us? And it's like, no, I wish we'd been there, but it's something to be proud about. And it seems that the club is doing its best to kind of try to slope your shoulder or kind of brush that stuff under the carpet, when really they should be trying to embrace it a bit more. But the good thing is, you know, Suffolk, did you guys put on, Graham, the full commentary of the 90 against Barnsley?
Yeah, I think we had, I can't remember whether we played the full game or not, but we certainly played a good chunk of it. But yeah, that was in terms of the summer kind of highlight for me, in broadcasted terms. I wasn't involved so much in the playoff actual program, but I did two programs over Easter dedicated to the 2000-2001 season, which Andy mentions. You know, if the playoff trophy was the moment, the following season really was the season when, you know, against all the odds, but playing some brilliant football as well, Town finished fifth, and it was such a joy to put that program together. I was listening back to some of the goal clips, some of the commentaries, you're going to Anfield, winning, and the Man City games and things like that. It was such a brilliant season, and Marcus Stewart arrived, didn't he, just before, a few months leading up to the actual trophy lift for the playoffs, and then again doing it all again next season in the Premier League. It was brilliant to listen back to.
Yeah, Andy, is there a sequel to the fantastic 1990-2000 documentary with the 2000-2001 one? Because you don't need too many more pieces, do you?
Well, yeah, if I'd thought about it before, maybe.
you've got six more months, it's fine.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I'd love to do another one again, because it was a lot of fun. We're going to try and do something. It might be slightly different, but we'll see.
That's great. And that documentary is still available on the Kings of Anglia YouTube, and it's worth it just for the last few minutes with Marcus Stewart when...
I thought it was my contribution there, Richard.
I mean, Joe's in there as well, but, you know, Joe's fine. You know, he's probably a 7 out of 10. But Marcus Stewart, did you ask him the question, what does Ipswich Town mean to you?
Yeah, that was literally the very last bit that we filmed of the whole thing, the very last seconds of it. And he's had a few tears. Tony, this was all filmed like a world apart. Like, we went to Blackburn to speak to Tony Mowbray and Mark Venus, and this was in like February. That's the very first time I had to fill in a coronavirus form back in February, when it was all new and this foreign. It was in Italy at the time, and it was like, "Have you been to Italy?" "No." "Okay, come on in, come and see Tony Mowbray." And then we couldn't finish it till August time, but yeah, Marcus and Tony Mowbray at the end stirred up a fair few emotions, I think, because you could just see how much the club and everything meant to these guys. Even now, all of them, they've achieved so much in football, all of them, but it's really, really is right there on the heart for all of them. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, and the supporters, that's the kind of stuff that we love to see. we go through the rest of May. We've got good news. Dobra signs a new 3-year deal. There's a League One salary cap proposed. Harry Redknapp reveals that Frank Lampard was offered the Ipswich job at the same time as Paul Hurst. Marcus Evans and Darren McAnthony are doing their best to get the season restarted into June. I think it's Marcus Evans proposes a mini playoff tournament. I mean, this is Graham.
Can we play?
There are sound barrels being scraped, aren't there? Joe, quickly before we continue into the summer, Town take up the options on Brett McGavin, Andre Dizel, and Harry Wright. There's a contract for Andre Dizel, and I think Brett McGavin further on into the season. The good news, obviously, that we're securing the young players with talent for long periods of time.
Yeah, definitely. But like I say, you just see how many players we've got these days for a League One squad. It is crazy. I looked it down. I think we've got 51 players sort of on the books, effectively, who are either signed professional contracts or are third-year scholars, effectively. So it is a mad amount of players. But like I say, all those, Harry Wright's been in Sweden on loan. I think he only played one cup game there. But both Brett McGavin and especially Andre Dizel have made real positive impacts to the first team this season.
Yep. Into June, we've got the new home kit marking the 40th anniversary of the UEFA Cup win. More history being rubbed in the players' faces. We have a September start confirmed for the new season. We finally get details of the season ticket refund. Man, that must have taken a while. Graham or Andy, were either of you being, you know, forced by supporters to try and stick it to the club on this one? Because it seemed
every single day. And we asked, and it was coming and coming and coming. They certainly took their time on that, didn't they?
Got new, and then got it came, new and there was a. It was quite a read, wasn't it? Really, it's like, well, a lot of info to go yeah. through.
Six options or something, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. The owner, he's been accused of getting things wrong in other departments, but did he get it right with that? I'm not so sure, really. 5-6 options. I think a lot of supporters were very, very generous during that period.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're going to be so generous
given what they'd had to put up with, you know, in the immediate months prior to the season ending. I'm not sure he got that right.
It's very difficult, isn't it? Sort of, I know it was sort of discussed at the time, but I was just before I came on this, I was just doing a Zoom with some of my school friends, and one of them's a season ticket holder at Crystal Palace, and he sort of said, oh, what's going on at Ipswich with the tickets? And for him, it's just, I paid full price my season ticket. I haven't been to any games. I can't go to any games. There's no talk of a refund. And this is a fan who's wow. Of a club sort of getting £100 million this year. They're just, he's like, well, I needed to keep hold of it because me and my dad and my brother have got 3 tickets in a row, and if we give them back, we might not get one next season. So, wow. I'd say it's not just here where there's problems. And like I say, when you see these clubs with a lot more money than us, and Evans is just sort of like pocket, sort of having to get his wallet out every month to pay the difference, it is a difficult situation.
Yeah, we had Scunthorpe came out pretty much straight away and said, we will not be refunding anything. So, yeah, different sides of the spectrum, isn't it? Evans at least has had one go at it. Graham, you can to figure out what he needs to do in June, July, whatever happens, maybe if we don't get back into the stadium. Also in June, we've got League One clubs voting to end the seasons early on points per game, despite Marcus's best efforts. And I think there was kind of like this one where we were trying to curry favour and negotiate and get people to vote in a certain way. It started getting very kind of the thick of it. Andy, yeah. did you get any insights on that?
It was like trying to whip the vote, wasn't it?
Was at times.
Quite frankly, it was a bit embarrassing, wasn't it? Was it a ten team playoff that was proposed from it?
Yeah.
Point of view, it's let it go.
at least he was trying.
Yeah, your chance to get promoted was on the pitch, and you messed that up. I can see why you would try by hook by crook, but I don't know if fans would have particularly fallen in love with a team that got promoted after desperately trying to claw their way back to the Championship, having failed. I don't know.
I don't think people would have cared that much. Once the season started, I think it would have just been forgotten about. Rather than,
think?
yeah, Yeah. And like I say, I do think it was a little bit, it was sort of embarrassing from all sides, us trying to get there, the teams that were in the playoff positions voting to end the season, even though they were going to then play the playoffs. It was just, it was impossible to let the clubs vote on something that was just pure self-interest. And I say it was just so poorly managed by the EFL from the sort of start to the finish. And sort of for me, the big concern is how far away League One has got from the Championship in all this, in everything. And I say it's a worrying sign for the future of the game.
Yeah, we talked about the tin pottery of League One, didn't we? And the fact that most of the teams were so happy and quick to not continue to play as professional football clubs. I think we talked about that quite a lot in the summer on the pod as well. So yeah, League One clubs voted to end the season, putting down 11th, our lowest league finish in 67 years, clearly by default. Into July, we've got Caden Jackson turning down a new contract. More on the Caden Jackson rumours in a bit. Bartosz Białkowski wins the Golden Glove for Millwall. Shock horror. Are you watching Paul Hurst? Paul Lambert, we have to learn from last season. Having previously said in June, we paid the price for a bad couple of months. Quote. I remember probably at quote tweeting these and having lots of sarcastic comments to these, and the players come back to training, and then this situation with Flynn Downes, Andy. Lee O'Neill comes out saying Flynn Downes is committed as ever, despite interest from Palace. We've got two bids that go into August. Let's keep going on this, because September he's given kind of a week off, isn't he, to get his head right.
Seems a lifetime ago, that, doesn't it? It feels it.
There, wasn't it?
Yeah. In terms of the bids, I don't think Palace and Ipswich ever got anywhere near each other in terms of valuation. I don't think Flynn was particularly well advised, both internally and externally during that, in terms of the way that he handled it. But I completely understand why he'd want to go. Of course I do. But I think, certainly in terms of outside influences, I don't think he was particularly well advised through that process, because he played his hand incredibly early, it felt, in terms of getting a move over the line that wasn't anywhere near the line, if that makes sense. You're kind of diving for the finish line and you're still 20 yards from the end, and it just didn't happen. It'd be really interesting to see where he's at when he's back in the team, which hopefully won't be too really, like, genuinely on this one, not Vincent Young style, like, genuinely isn't too far away by the sounds of things.
It's been 2 months, wasn't it? But yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know if teams will be coming in for him in January now necessarily. He's barely kicked a ball. And I don't think Ipswich will have dropped their price. So it'd be really interesting to see where he's at when he's back in the team, because for me, he's the difference maker of all these players coming back. He's the one.
Yeah. And I think, Joe, you were talking about this last week. He's possibly the partner to bring out the best in Andre Dizel as well. And you know, you want to see that, don't you?
Yeah. Well, we seem to have sort of moved to more of a sort of 4-2-3-1 than the sort of 4-1-4-1 with Dizel sittings. I just don't think the sort of defensive protection was there. But if you put down, say, you get both sides, you get the defensive side and you get the player that can get up the pitch. So, and like I said, and also you've got players that have played together for 10 years who know each other's game like the back of their hand.
He definitely brings out the best in Andre, doesn't he? Andre needs players that's on his wavelength. Flynn certainly on that. I think even in the last couple of games, we've seen the benefit of Andre playing alongside someone a little further forward in terms of breaking from midfield, and some 1-2s on the edge of the box in the last couple of games that have looked like they're going to cause some trouble. But pair him and Flynn and you could really be onto something there.
Yep.
And like I said, I know Emi Hughes hasn't been that impressive this season, but it felt in the Burton game, it really unleashed Dizel a little bit to sort of play more of that sort of, like you say, getting forwards game and sort of actually having a bit of presence in front of the back four as well.
The chat about 2020 just kept going. So we've split this into two. This is the end of part one. Part two will be out within the next day or so. We hope you enjoy that. Hope you're taking care of yourself and enjoying Christmas and New Year and relaxing. And as I said, keep eyes peeled for part number two. Thanks for listening.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.